Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
Day one, tough going. Blisters, healing hands, cramps everywhere, quads, hammies, calves. Completely dehydrated, seasickness.
Hi guys, 4 full days in, and I wanted to give you a little bit of an update on how things are progressing. Obviously, last time I talked to you, I was in a bit of a state, physically, mentally, and emotionally, but processed that real quickly and got on with things, and I've been churning away since then. All good. Hey folks, day 14, crazy day. To be honest, this happened at 7 o'clock this morning. I haven't had a moment even to look at it. I'm just having a gawk now in this. So my face woke me up this morning, getting smashed off the side of the cabin during the capsize. And then it was complete disorientation for a few seconds. The whole cabin was all over the shop, all over me. Hi guys, day 17 from mid-Atlantic somewhere. Happy New Year, everyone. I'd like to wish everyone following my row across the Atlantic and happy, healthy, and adventurous 2018. Day 24, just seeing this beard now. I haven't been able to get a charge into my phone because I brought 4 cables and they all broke within 3 or 4 days of each other. I'm now about 1 hour 25 minutes or so into day 36, week 6, and 5 weeks done and dusted aboard Darien. Be honest, we've had some communication difficulties on board, but I'm happy to say that they've been remedied, and I can continue to share this epic and crazy adventure with you guys. Day 61, pretty wild night, to say the least. Squalls, like ridiculous squalls, and biblical squalls, and some huge waves hitting the cabin.
Yeah, what a journey it was for Damian Brown. Some excerpts from his video diary there of 63 days, 6 hours and 25 minutes at sea. One boat, no engine, no sail, no support, no company, but he survived all the way from the Canary Islands to Antigua, where he joins us now. Damian, congratulations.
Thanks very much, Nathan.
How have the last couple of days been?
It's been great. It's nice to get onto solid ground and get back to, the normality of the existence we live, I suppose. I'm still kind of adjusting in some ways. Like when I get up in the morning and the rooms are still swaying a little bit, I'm not exactly walking in straight lines, but every day is that little bit better.
How much of the 63 days was spent thinking about how you were going to feel when you finally arrived at the finish line in Antigua and saw your family?
I tried not to get too kind of fixated and have my thoughts kind of on things I couldn't control, like the finish and that. But there was a lot of thoughts at the very kind of first few weeks on, like what I was going to eat and drink, and you know, where if I had the choice of any restaurant I've ever been in, what would I get and which one would I eat and that sort of stuff. But I just found that it was kind of putting me in the wrong mindset when, right, I was kind of focused on the outcome rather than the process. So I just tried to be as kind of just in the moment as possible, as much as I could. But I found that naturally you just drift towards what it's going to be like when you finish. And there was times when things got pretty bad, like when I was kind of just feeling too sorry for myself, that I would use the kind of images I've seen of former rowers and the emotional images you see of them finishing, to kind of break that rot I was in, it was kind of a fight at all times to kind of try not to be too outcome orientated.
And how are you after it, physically, mentally? How are you feeling right now?
No, I feel good. Like it surprised me a little bit how kind of quickly I've readjusted, if you want, the end was a little bit, there was a lot going on when I came in, and I saw my family and I saw my brother. I didn't expect to be there, and there's lots of people there, lots of noise. And, when you think I've heard about 3 or 4 different noises, like the howling winds, the breaking waves, and the rush of the oars through the water, that's about all I've heard, kind of maybe the whirl of the water maker as well for like 63 days. So, you know, when you're hit with this kind of cacophony, of noise, like, there's a lot to take in when you actually arrive, and it is a little bit overwhelming, but once you kind of, I suppose you kind of steal away with your family a little bit, it's, you kind of readjust real quickly.
Was it your dad who greeted you on the finish line?
Yeah, my dad, yeah, I think he was a little bit worried, because when I got off the boat, I had no idea that my legs were going to be like that. We weren't briefed on like anything, like you're going to walk like you know, a newborn giraffe, basically, for...
on the verge of falling back in.
And then I got hit with the champagne in the eyes, you know. So I think he came with a tissue at first. And then, yeah, obviously, I saw him coming. I just wanted to hug him, you know. So, yeah, it was an amazing moment, you know, with him and my mom and then my whole family.
What was the motivation for taking on a challenge like this?
Originally it was reading The Crossing by Ben Fogle and James Cracknell. I read that about 10 or 12 years ago, I'd say, when I was obviously in the middle of my rugby career. And I just knew then and there, like, that these challenges or these adventures or experiences are for me, you know. I don't know, I just really like pushing myself, and I feel I'm kind of the best version of myself, or I really like the version of myself I am when I'm tested to my limits, you know. I really like that space that I'm in, and you know, it's not something obviously you can live every day, but I like going there from time to time. It gives me a great kind of, I suppose, perspective maybe, and I feel that they're almost, you know, the harder it gets, the more it suits me, and it's a place I love to go to from time to time, and I like to go there in my training as well, you know, so obviously on a much smaller level, but so these are basically experiences, and the Atlantic Row was one that, like, I always had in my mind. I couldn't wait to take it on, just because of the size of it, you know, and the enormity, I suppose, of the endeavour.
How much of your time then do you feel at sea was spent in that good place mentally, the place that you really enjoy, where you feel like you're really pushing yourself, and how much was spent, I guess, worried, concerned, fearful, wondering what the hell am I doing?
Really, not a lot was spent in that space. Like, it's really only moments. Like, and I can remember the moments. I remember them, like, for when I capsized, the second time I capsized, and the peak was without a doubt when I lost my steering, you know, on day 17. Like, because I was going, you can go into this endeavor in a lot of different ways, but I went with the rawest way possible, which is a thing called foot steering. So I was steering the boat with a foot pedal, basically, you know, from side to side. When that broke, basically, you're steering with the oars, which is literally the crudest way you can get across the Atlantic. So I almost felt, this can't get any harder. This is perfect. It's in a kind of weird way, if you get me. And I just kind of, it was almost like a moment where I went, right, let's see what you're made of now, you know. And
had you prepared yourself for that? Like, that it's very difficult for your average person. You just feel sorry for yourself. And when you're completely isolated in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, like, had you prepared yourself? Had you mental tricks to get yourself out of the difficult moments like that?
That one, I think, is I don't know if that's just something that's inside me, like, but I have loads of mental tricks in, like, well, not loads, but I have a few little, I have resets, and I do a lot of affirmations, like, you know, in the mornings and that, so, you know, like, maybe the last kind of year I've been telling myself, you know, the odd morning, you know, when I do my affirmations, you know, I have, like, I would say to myself, nothing will stop you rowing across the Atlantic. I would just repeat it to myself, you know, so I think that just helps with your mental state, you know, so when it comes to moments like that, you almost revert naturally to that positive thought. And then I haven't told anyone this, but, like, I would be screaming stuff, like, as I rode sometimes, trying to get a reset. So another one would be, you're unbreakable, you're unstoppable, you're indestructible, you're unbreakable, you're unstoppable, you're indestructible. And I would be screaming that to try and get a frequency, if you get me. Like, you know, so you need three things. You need the positive affirmation. You need a visualization. So I would try and see myself from a high, almost like a drone shot of myself in the middle of the Atlantic. And then I would need a frequency, so I need a feeling with that visualization, so a feeling of power, basically. So that's why I'd be saying, you're unbreakable, you're unstoppable, you're indestructible. And but I would be, believe it or not, I would say that at the most, like, mundane times. Those times I found hardest were just the hours and hours and hours of just sitting on the oars and trying to stay on the oars, you know. So I'd always, that voice would come into your head saying, you know, just get off the oars, man. Just get off, crawl into the cabin there, you know, it's nice and cold. Or sorry, it's nice and cozy. Who's going to know? You know, who's going to know what's the difference between 63 or 64 days? But then I would, like, just try and reset with my affirmations and doing that kind of, you know, crazy screaming thing. Or I wouldn't be, might not always be screaming. I might be just saying it to myself, you know. But sometimes I wanted to really get that frequency, so I'd be trying to roar it at the top of my voice, you know. Those things are, although they sound incredibly corny, maybe the phrases, they're so, so powerful, and they work really well, you know, when you're in those hard times and you need to get back to a positive mindset.
And did you find yourself turning to that sort of affirmation every day, or was it a couple of times a day, or was it once a week?
It varies, huh? Like, sometimes it could be a few times a day. Like, if I was in a kind of weak mindset, I might find myself drifting back into the thoughts of, like, oh, when am I going to get in? Like, so, you know, if I do, you know, I'd be thinking about things that are out of my control, you know. So if I do 6 hours later and I do another 2 hours during the night, then I'll do so many miles. And then if I continue like that, et cetera, et cetera, I'll get in so many days, if you get me. And then, so those days that I was thinking like that, I might have to do some sort of resets, you know, quite regularly. Like, but it's just having the awareness to do them, having the awareness that you're in a bad mindset and trying to change that into a, you know, something more controllable or something more positive, depending on the, you know, the mindset, I suppose.
I was talking to Gavin Hennigan quite recently, who did the same challenge as you, and he was talking about late at night in the darkness and the beauty of the stars and not knowing where the sky begun and end, and having that moment by yourself, but you know how that moment doesn't last forever. You're staring at it for 10 minutes and you see a thing of beauty, and then you get back to work and maybe it loses its magic. Did it ever lose its magic for you?
I suppose it did a little bit. Like, I can relate to exactly what you said there, or what Gav said, you know, that, you know, you do, like, you come out of your cabin some nights, you say, to do a night shift or a late, like, kind of 11 to 1 or 2 or whatever, and you're like, wow, man, you're just, it's an incredible night, and, you know, 380 or 180 degree kind of view of just stars. But, like, yeah, then it's over, right? You just get on the oars and you're back to the grind, and you're like, okay. And the nights, I found the nights and the early mornings, I found really hard, especially if there was no moonlight, because I had to come back to steering with the oars. You need to really see where the oars are going into the water, and if there's no moonlight, it's, you know, pitch black up until about 3 or 4 foot outside your vision. So you know, you get the oars in right one in, you know, 50 times, like, so the other times you're getting oars into the ribs or the down on the quad or into the shins, you know. And it's constant just fight to stay there and just go, all right, man, you just need to get this 2 hours done, you know, do your rep sets and reps, you know, you have to get it done. Because I was aiming to get 40 miles every day, but some days I had to put in a lot more hours to get that because of the conditions or whatever it may be. So,
and is there any fear in that pitch black?
No, not so much. I never was really scared or anything. It's just frustration, man. The whole thing is at times it's infuriating, frustrating, at times you feel like crying, like, you know, when the winds are really high and the waves are really big. I couldn't get the boat straight because I had to fulcrum down off one side. If people can kind of understand this, to turn the boat, turn the cabin into the wind and try and get it facing downwind, because when I don't have an auto helm, an autopilot on board, the boat just turns sideways to the waves. So then to try and get it going with the wind and the waves, you have to fulcrum off one side and then power, like, with the other side of the oars to try and straighten the boat. And what would happen was, when the winds are really strong, so when I got it straight, it would literally, it could take 3 or 4 seconds for the wind to knock it to 1 or 2 degrees from straight, and then it would just get pushed back down sideways. And then, I tell you do that 3 or 4 or 5 times, and you have to work incredibly hard to get straight, and it knocks you down every time, man. It is infuriating, and sometimes you just feel like crying, man. You're like, I don't know if I can get up there, I don't know if I can go again. But as long as I kept trying, you know, I was able to accept it, you know. But you know, I just tried, sometimes just try to never really kind of give up on it and just keep fighting the whole way across.
Yeah, looking at the photos of you on your arrival in Antigua, you're in some shape. Are you physically stronger or weaker at the end of it?
I felt really good, because, like, I felt strong coming in. I would say I'm a lot weaker than I probably... I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know. I'm not a lot weaker anyway, but I, because I had to work so hard and every on the oars, like I would have probably kept a lot of kind of strength. And even when I was coming in, because I did a lot of my training on the west coast of Ireland, you know, you're warned, like, keep this boat away from the coastline because the wind can just catch it and throw it onto the rocks. So, and as I was coming in, all the wind and the waves were facing right to the, obviously right to Antigua, and all you can see is the waves smashing on the coastal wall, like this kind of a shelf or whatever. So I was like, I'm not going anywhere near that, you know, because I was having trouble with my GPS, and I was having, like, my GPS was showing the waypoint was on land. The waypoint is where I aim for, you know, my GPS coordinates. So I was like, I'm not going anywhere near that. So basically, I was rowing kind of nearly perpendicular to the island, and the rib came out, the search and rescue rib, and goes, you need to turn basically due north straight into the island or you're going to miss your turn. The wind and the waves are just going to carry you past the island. So I had to work really hard for about 20 minutes going basically due north. So that meant straight towards the island and, again, side on to the waves. But even then, like that 20 minutes, I felt pretty strong. And you know, the guy said to me afterwards, and I don't know, I didn't really realize, but he said, you know, that was dodgy enough there. You could have easily missed the island. I was like, right.
Where was the next stop?
Yeah, I would have ended up, where is it, Guadeloupe or somewhere, the next island down probably. So I was quite, I suppose that showed that I kept quite a bit of strength, even though I did find that 20 minutes quite hard and draining, you know, but yeah.
I know you didn't want to get caught up in thoughts of what you would do when you got to dry land and in terms of meals and going for drinks and family and all that, but that moment when you do get to dry land, is it everything you imagined it would be? The level of satisfaction after achieving such a remarkable feat? Are you satisfied?
I am, I'm without a doubt satisfied, because I know what I put in out there to get across, you know, and I know I was... I also wanted the challenge to be everything like that, so I'm content in what the challenge was. You know, I'd hate to be sitting here going, oh man, that was a little bit easy, you know. The moment itself was a bit kind of just over the top or overwhelming. Like, you know, I really, really happy with the moments I shared with my parents, and I think I'll look back on that. But I think there's a lot of processing to come into, still to come into effect on what I've actually achieved, you know, and I think that'll take a long time. And I suppose that's the deep reward I talked about before, you know, instead of the spike of kind of that immediate gratification, it's more of slow burner, and you can kind of look back on it with like pride maybe as the days and months and years pass by.
Yeah, I know Gavin Hennigan, when he landed in the Caribbean, that maybe it was the emotion, or maybe it was the adrenaline got to him, and I think he announced quite quickly he was going to roll back again from New York to Galway before he finally got some good sense. What's next for you?
I don't know. I had, like, obviously lots of times to think about it, and lots of ideas sprung into my head. And another ocean row was one of them, believe it or not, while I was out there. But again, I'll take some time. And I always, one thing I did have in my head before I even started was that I would, like, maybe go back to the mountains. Like, I really enjoy the mountains and the challenge they bring, you know. So that was something I had in my head to try again. And I had, like, ambitiously, I wanted to do Elbrus in the build-up. Elbrus is the highest mountain in Europe. I wanted to climb that. It's in Russia in mid-May, say, 2017. But I realized very quickly the amount of time it takes to prepare for an Atlantic row, that would not be feasible, you know. So, you know, that could be something I might try this summer, or, you know, something like that. But it won't be something that takes 18 months to prepare for, and basically every day you have to do something about it, or for it, or every minute, every hour of every day, you know.
Yeah, we've a lot of texts and tweets coming in wishing you well. One saying you're like Tom Hanks in Castaway. Did you have a mascot like Hanks had Wilson the volleyball to keep you company?
I actually didn't. I didn't. The guy in the boat beside me before I took off, because we were all, you know, hooked up together, he had an actual volleyball that said Wilson, and I was like, oh, I can't copy that, you know. So my idea was to get a rugby ball with Gilbert on it, but I just never got around to it, man. Too many priorities at that stage.
What did you have? Did you have music with you?
I had music, but I had to get rid of it. I only got rid of it about maybe 5 or 6 weeks in or so. because the space on my phone for the video diaries, I took some personal ones as well, you know, that I will see what I want to do with them, you know, but they're a bit longer, like some are 7 or 8 minutes long, you know, and then I had shorter ones that I would send to Owen, who would post them on Facebook. And I brought a load of audiobooks. I must have spent €300 on audiobooks, but unfortunately, I never tested them out, and I couldn't hear the voice on the through the speakers.
Oh, no.
because of the wind on the Atlantic, you know, which never stops, basically. So that was, and I didn't bring any headphones because I was told they would fall apart inside a few days. So, or I would need about 8 sets of them. So I didn't bother. I was happy enough with the speakers, but that was a bit of a disaster.
Ask Damien about his close call with a massive cargo ship.
Yeah, that was only 100 and so miles out from Antigua.
Right.
I turned, basically, run away. When you're solo, you can't. The AIS shows all the boats that are in your vicinity, and once they're within 3 or 4 miles of you, they start beeping. But as a solo, you can't really hear the beeping through the wind when you're on the deck, because the AIS in the cabin, obviously. So I didn't hear that going off, and then I just looked over my shoulder and I saw this thing bearing down on me. It was only about 3 miles away. It was like 200 meters long or something, like 30 meters wide. It was called the Georgia T, if you remember it. So I rushed into the cabin to turn on the VHF radio, which is the intership radio, like to hail them and tell them I'm here, because they mightn't see me, although they have watchers on the bridge, you know. But thankfully, as I came back out just to see what it was doing, I could see it was tilting to the north. And I had obviously showed up on their AIS, and they made the maneuver to avoid me, because, believe me, I am not fast enough in a small little ocean rowing boat to get out of the way of one of those things. I was pretty sketchy there for the guts, 2 or 3 minutes.
I'd say so. Good man, Damien. Been following your uploaded clips. At last, you were able to sit down and put the feet up, or maybe not, if your backside is still blistered. Well done on an epic journey up Clada. One of the messages in. When are you back in Ireland?
Not sure. Maybe I wanted to see a little bit of the Caribbean while I was here, because I, you know, worked hard enough to get here.
Exactly.
Been here before. And then just a couple of sponsors I'd like to see on the way back that are in New York and Toronto. So maybe within a month or so, I would say, get back and, see what's next, make some plans and get on with it.
Well, enjoy the couple of weeks in the Caribbean. It couldn't be more deserving. You might pop into us when you get back, Damien.
A truly
epic journey. You're some man. Well done again, Damien Brown. Thanks a lot for joining us. Enjoy Antigua.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it. Cheers, then.
Yeah, pretty remarkable stuff from Damien Brown. As I say, a lot of texts coming in to 53106, a lot of tweets as well, wishing Damien all the very best. And I would get him in when he gets back to Ireland over the coming weeks and chat a little bit more about that journey, which he seems to have very much taken in his stride.
Off the ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.